19-year-old star, Luka Doncic. I don't even know if I'm saying his name properly. Doncic, okay. I'll learn it over time. And if I'm butchering it, that's kind of what I do. You know, I'm not a polished broadcaster, so that's all right. But the Warriors, their half-court execution, I mean, of course it's going to be in question. When you're missing Draymond Green, when you're missing Steph Curry, you're missing, what is it, $18 million that they're paying Draymond Green, $37 million that they're paying Steph Curry. I mean, that's a huge chunk of the salary cap. And what that does is it completely limits what you can put on your bench. And so when everybody's freaking out about where the Warriors are, why they can't beat Dallas, it's like, dude, the best player on the team, Steph Curry's gone. And then a guy who provides lots of different offense, lots of different defensive transitional buckets, switches, helps, rebounding, facilitating in the offense, he's out. And so I understand the snapback reaction is, oh, well, Clay and KD, they're two all-stars. They should be able to just dominate and find a way to win that game. But the rest of the team is just so thin. They're just so thin. And again, when you go back to the financials, when you're missing $45, $50 million worth of talent on the court, you're going to be thin on the bench. And I get that. I thought they got some good shots late in the game. They just didn't knock them down. I would like to see Steve Kerr run more of an offensive set as opposed to Kevin Durant just getting a one-on-one. And I like the one-on-one for Kevin Durant because he is a mismatch nightmare. But I would like to see them run some more offense. And I think that's where I look at Andre Iguodala and I say, well, maybe he should play a little more point guard in those types of situations. It was nice to see Steve Kerr finally take that time out. So that the team could set up and put together a nice play. And I feel like they got a really good shot. Clay coming off the dribble had his man beat. It looked like DeAndre Jordan was sliding over so he couldn't go all the way to the cup. And he pulled up. Hey, look, any mid-range good jumper for Clay, I like that shot. But Clay is having a very tough start to the season. I think he's shooting 33% from three-point line. And Kevin Durant's not taking any three-pointers. But there were some positives to pull away from last night's game. Damian Lee, I kind of was very critical on Damian Lee. And I said, you know, they got Steph's brother-in-law on the team. The guy's got the Karate Kid headband. I mean, he's not that good. I was proven wrong yesterday. He had a really good game yesterday. It was really nice to see Sean Livingston get his return to the lineup. I know he's kind of eased his way back after the foot injury early in the season. And Bonte and I were going back and forth on the text last night. And I said, well, where's this guy been all year, Sean Livingston? And he said, well, if push came to shove, he was healthy enough to play earlier, but they weren't rushing it. I mean, veterans, regular season, it's meaningless. And I hear him, but I do want to see this team start to win games. I do. I really like what Jonas Jerebko's done for this team. I mean, he's such a versatile, athletic big. He could shoot the three. Not proficiently, but sufficiently enough to where you actually have to go out and guard him. He could put the ball on the floor. He's definitely a guy who's very active on the glass. I think he's very good with his switching, his help defense. I just think he's a really smart player, really good player. And they missed Alphonso McKinney yesterday. You know, he was out as well. So I wanted to win that game. I was frustrated, but it's not the end of the world. The bigger thing for me, and you guys can get in at 888-957-888-9570. Is Draymond Green on his way out? That's the question I have. And the reason I'm coming to that conclusion is because I'm a little worried that he was on an injury, he missed some games, came back. Obviously, they had the drama. Then they rested him again. And I'm seeing some conspiracy theorists float out the idea that maybe Draymond Green is on the trading block. And that's why they're kind of not pushing him, not having him suit up. I'd be interested to see if he plays today. I'd be very interested to see if he plays today because they really miss Draymond Green facilitating. I mean, this guy, he's top 10 in assists from the power forward position. He's top 20 in rebounding every year and again this year. They just miss his attitude, his physicality, and another guy who can set other people up and play make. That's what they really need. They really need Draymond Green back. And I know a lot of people are up in arms. Oh, KD, Draymond. Oh. I need to see this guy play. I want to see him and KD on the court together winning again. Because winning is the greatest deodorant. And I think that that will really allow them to put this situation in the past and move forward. And I have a big, big, big question. And I'm not being chicken little here. How severe is the Steph Curry injury? We don't know. I'm a little nervous. It could be a sports hernia. And I understand you want to be cautious. I get that. I really do. But man, if this team could use a shot in the arm from their leader, Steph Curry, it's right now. I mean, they need some positivity. You heard Klay Thompson bring it up in the postgame after that, three nights ago, you know, once we go on a roll, this will all be forgotten like a ponytail. And I want to believe that. But you got to get on a roll first. You got to win three or four in a row. And this doesn't mean that they're not the favorite. They can't win the championship. I'm just saying it's a little worrisome. I'm not category five alarmed, hurricane style, but I'm getting there. And I see Boogie on the bench wearing that Master P outfit every single week, that 1998 R&B outfit every single week. And I'm saying, I can't wait for Boogie Cousins to come back. And they're going up against a Spurs team that's kind of limping in. They're 1-5. 1-5 right now. I think they've lost their last three. So this is a fun game that I'm looking forward to. I'm really interested to see how the team reacts to last night's loss on a back-to-back. Is Iguodala going to play heavy minutes? Is Sean Livingston going to play heavy minutes? You know, that's part of the nuance of why the Warriors are so thin. Not only are they out Steph Curry and Draymond Green and the $45 to $50 million that those guys are making, but $26 million of this salary cap is dedicated to Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston. And you know going in, those guys are older players, and they're not going to give you a whole lot in the regular season, and they're definitely not going to give you a whole lot in back-to-back situations. And so everybody going bonkers and crazy, I understand the worry, but I also understand the side of caution and patience and understanding that we just got to get Steph back. And that's where I'm like, well, when is he going to be back? And is this the type of injury to where when he comes back, he could re-aggravate it down the line? If it was an ankle injury, because he's had so many of them, I would say, oh, it's no big deal. It's Steph Curry. He's had so many ankle injuries over the years. He knows his body better than anyone. And every time he's come back from these ankle injuries, when we've needed him most, for the most part, he's delivered. And I know the 2016 finals, oof, it wasn't his best moment when he couldn't shake Kevin Love, but at least he was out there. And so I'm just curious how severe this groin, adductor, whatever the heck it's called, injury, all the, you know, internet web MDs out there could kind of clue us in. But
Well, Butcher, it's an adductor because it's on the inside of your thigh. So it's like when you're closing your legs, you're adding it. That's where the nomenclature comes
from. Notre Dame education there from our producer, Gabe Osler. Phenomenal. I love that. I'm just looking at the stats for the year and I'm looking at the Warriors team stats because some of the things that I look at, you know, are they passing the ball? Are they moving the ball? They are. They're still in the top, you know, three in assists out there. They're still scoring a lot. 118 points per game puts them in the top three. There's still a lot of the telltale signs, but there is a vibe that feels a little weird. And I thought at times yesterday I was looking past it and I thought, man, Quinn Cook is cooking. I thought Quinn Cook was on fire. And then he doesn't play in the final minutes. And I'm like, Steve Kerr. And that kind of brings me up to Steve Kerr. And I love Steve Kerr. I love Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh, oh, everybody loves him. Even Bill Belichick, we love him. But even the greatest of all time in their respective sports have flaws. Steve Kerr, for as great as he is, some of his rotations drive me mad. They drive me absolutely bonkers. Yes, 2016 finals. Andy Varejao, second quarter, made no sense. Waiting on Steph Curry till the six-minute mark in that Game 7, unbelievable mistake. But it's throughout the regular season, and I get it. You got to just throw things at the wall sometimes. Sometimes you got to let players play through things. But my goodness, feed the hot hand, put Quinn Cook back out there. And the double-edged side of that sword is that Quinn Cook's not the greatest defender. But it's not like J.J. Barea was cooking us last night. It was Doncic, however you pronounce his name, by the way. Is he Is he a stud or is he a stud? Can pass, can move, can dribble, can shoot, great awareness, not scared of KD at all.
Uses his body incredibly in the paint. The way that he was getting in and finishing at the rim, not out of speed, not out of blowing by people, but pure technical wizardry and physicality from a kid who's 19.
Love
He's
it.
Younger than everybody in the station right now.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, everybody here is young. I'm the old guy today. I think I'm the oldest guy in here today. Get in line, 888-957-9570. Tell me how you feel about the Warriors at 1 o'clock, top of the hour. We're going to talk to Grant Cohn. We're going to talk 49ers. I'm going to keep you updated on the football situation. We got a 19-19 game. Gurus Cowboys versus the Atlanta Falcons wearing them throwbacks. Lamar Jackson on my television. Come back on the other side. Let's have fun as everybody's camped in here on a Fire Watch weekend here at 957 The Game. Oh yeah. Welcome back. This is The Butcher Shop. I am Joe Shasky. 888-957-9570. Where you at on the Warriors? Where you at on the 49ers right now? Midseason grades. You worried about Shanahan? We'll get to Grant Cohn at the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, about 14 minutes from now. But, you know, the Warrior game last night, there was a lot of things that I took away from a loss that, not necessarily alarming, but things that I'm going to jot down and I'm going to, you know, put a little star, a little asterisk next to. Damian Jones. I had high hopes for Damian Jones heading into this year. I really liked his athleticism. The guy could jump out of the roof. A few years ago, I didn't even think he would be able to make this roster at any point. I was really worried about his hands, his ability to just stay on the court and not foul people left and right. And he started off really well. I really liked what I saw the first couple games. And he's slowly, slowly starting to regress. And I think a part of why he's regressing is because we're asking him to do more. I think we're asking him to do other things in the light of not having Draymond, in the light of not having Steph Curry there. So it'll be very interesting to monitor some of these young guys and their confidence level. And I brought up Quinn Cook in the first segment, and I'm going to go back to it. Quinn Cook is somebody that I need to step up in the absence of Steph Curry. I understand he has deficiencies on the defensive end, but I need him to have that confidence to pull that three. I think he's a really good ISO player in certain situations and matchups. I think he's a really good spot-up player. I think he can help with the spacing. I'd like to see this team get out and run some more without Steph Curry. And I think part of why you can't run is because you don't have Draymond grabbing that rebound off the rim and starting that break. You know, Draymond, that's if we were looking at one element of his game that truly helps this offense, is that when he gets a rebound and pushes the tempo, it creates chaos for the defense on the other end, and they are backtracking and scrambling. And so you get a lot of open looks. You get a lot of ball movement. I think you get a lot of just pure looks for pure shooters. And we're looking at Clay, and we're going, man, what is going on? What is going on of you guys with Klay Thompson's shot? Why is he so off right now? And the thing for me is, I just think that he's going through a little slump. I mean, have you not watched Klay over the last few years? He's got times for 2-week stretches where it just looks like he can't find the rim. Like there's a board over the hole, over the rim. And then there's other times where the guy's pouring in, you know, 40 points in a quarter on 5 dribbles. So, you know, It's nothing to be too concerned about. I'm ready for Steph Curry to come back. I wanted to bring up this Stephen A. Smith sound, though. I know we got a football Sunday going on here. The Lions up 20-13 on the Panthers. And shout out to Alex Smith. I feel bad for him. I was ripping Alex Smith. Threw two of the worst interceptions I've ever seen in my life. And then got his ankle snapped like 5 plays later. I mean, devastating injury. Absolutely devastating injury. I feel bad for Alex Smith. And Colt McCoy, ex-49er. Ex-Texas football player, comes in and throws a touchdown pass. But let's get to the Stephen A. Smith sound. Give me the Stephen A. Smith sound regarding Kevin Durant.
See, this is moments like this where I really, really miss being a reporter. Could you imagine if he sat up there and told, you gonna tell me how to do my job? You gonna tell me not to? I can understand you not commenting. I can understand you saying no comment. I can understand you saying you not talking about that no more. You gonna look a reporter in the face and tell him, don't ask me again, like you gonna do something if he did ask you? Man, there's moments like that where I really, really, really miss being that guy at that report. At that point. Can you imagine if you gonna dare me to ask you? I'd have shut everybody down and asked the same question over and over and over. Like, what you think you gonna do if I ask you? What you talking about? You don't have to answer. But you're going to tell me what to ask and what not to ask? So, in other words, you on the bench and you upset because Draymond, you didn't go hard at Draymond, but you're going to go hard at a reporter.
I mean, is that guy serious? Was that Stephen A. Smith or was that?
I'm undefeated. Never lost.
LeVar Ball. Was that LeVar Ball or Stephen A. Smith? That guy is absurd.
That's just. The thing that irks me about this, and this is something that I know our boy Matt Kolsky agrees with, this is typical national tough guy posturing. Because, yeah, you got a busy schedule, Stephen A., and yeah, you're not on the beat anymore, but you can go get credentialed. You're Stephen A. Smith. I know you. You can go get a credentialed any media space that you want in this league. So if you feel that passionate about it, you go. You go make your point. Don't just talk about it. Make your point.
Gaby Osler coming in hard. Stephen A. Smith is a character. Why does anyone get so bothered by him? Dude, he's playing an act. He's playing a role. It's hilarious. And his feud, you better not test me, Kevin Durant. Remember 2 years ago when he did that? He waved his finger, I'm going to look in the camera and I'm going to say it again. Stephen A. Smith is hilarious to me. And you know what? You know what the underlying portion of all of this is? They're both phonies. KD's kind of soft and fake. And so is Stephen A. Smith. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. Stephen A. Smith. And you know what? We've had Mark Medina on this radio station 100 times, 1,000 times. I actually met him in the green room before. He's the nicest guy in the world. He's not posturing at anyone. He's not trying to get clicks. He's not trying to do any of those things. He's just a nice guy covering the team. He loves basketball. And Kevin Durant dismissed him so poorly. And then Stephen A. Smith, like, if I was in that situation, this is what I would have done. Stephen A., oh my God. Take a deep breath. And everybody else take a deep breath. He's not coming out here getting credentialed and going to go ask KD. And that's, yeah, here's the other thing. And this is something that I've learned over the years as someone who's not part of the media. It's so much easier for people who don't go into the locker room every single day, who don't have to walk up to these guys and see them and interact with them on a daily basis and to be tough guy. Oh, this is what I would say. This is how I would do it. You have to be more diplomatic than that. You have to be able to have a working relationship so that you can get certain answers out of them so that they don't shut down to you. It's a lot more difficult of a job than the fans give it credit for. And I felt bad for Mark Medina. I know he's a tough guy. He's going to figure it out. He's not worried about KD throwing that at him. If anything, he probably laughed about it. But it's just like, come on, KD. And this goes back to where I go back to the KD being just so emo, just so millennial. And I'm just like, KD, can you just learn to fake it? Like, I think that's a problem with a lot of you young guys in here in the studio. We got a lot of young guys. You don't have a lot of work-life experiences, and I don't knock you for it. It's something that you're going to learn over time. You get paid, not just to work, but sometimes to fake it. To fake it. You'll get married one day, all you guys, okay? And you're going to have to go to your family, your wife's side of the family's parties. Thanksgiving's coming up. You might have to go to your own family parties. And you're going to have to fake it a little, okay? Put on your game face, as my dad used to say. KD, put on the post-game press conference game face.
I hear you. I hear you. But just think about proportionally. Because how many times you got to put on your game face where it really matters? You get a couple occasions, if you're going to talk about that specifically, per year. You got a holiday here and there where you got to step it up. KD has to have this face on that you're talking about 24/7. There is media waiting for him to slip up at every available opportunity, so you got to give him a little bit more slack because the bar is just so much higher than any of us will face in our everyday lives.
Well, this is the other thing, though, okay? Steve Kerr said this to Steph Curry in a very famous audio bite. You don't get paid all of this money because you're a great basketball player. You get paid all of this money because you're a great basketball player and because you have to put up with all of this other stuff. And part of this other stuff is showing up every single day and putting on a game face. And I think that's the most underrated aspect of why Steph is such a great player, such a great teammate, and such a great ambassador for this organization, and why the entire organization went from being the Tampa Bay Bucks of basketball to one of the top three or four sports franchises in the world, because Steph understands, and you guys will learn this. It's called playing the game. You got to play the game a little. And I don't mean play the basketball game. I mean play the media game, the psychological game, okay? So it's a long play. And I love KD. I love him on the court. Off the court, can't stand the way he acts. I mean, tweeting at 11-year-old anonymous accounts, like, dude, somebody needs to take his phone away sometimes. I mean, seriously, they need to. Let's get back to the actual game, though. Because last night, I did see some decent ball movement. I did. Everybody's forgetting about one of my favorite plays in the final minute. It's when KD's at the top of the key. He's dribbling. And Iguodala did a nice little simple back cut, and all of the Dallas Mavericks are standing there staring at Kevin Durant, waiting for him to continue to go one-on-one, and they get an easy dunk on a back cut, very simply, simple play. And I thought that that was a really nice play from Kevin Durant, and I'd like to see them, when they put the ball in his hands more, instead of guys just standing around because you don't have Steph, because you don't have Draymond, maybe to set back screens and Steph to stand and spot shoot, I need more cuts away from the ball. I need more guys moving without the ball. And I think that that is one of the hidden elements of when you play a young guy like Damian Jones. And I know he didn't play in the final minutes, but he's not the screen setter that Andrew Bogut was, or even that Zaza Pachulia was. And that's something that he needs to work on. You don't just stand at the elbow. You don't just pop out to the corner and stand there and be useless when you're 7 feet tall. Go run, find Klay Thompson, find Iguodala, find Livingston, whoever else is on the court, and go set a back screen. Move around a little. This is basic basketball. And I'd like to see this team push the tempo more. And I think that because you don't have Draymond, they can't push the tempo the way they would like to.
This is part of what's been frustrating for me, too, is exactly this kind of stuff that you're talking about. Klay, who I give lots of leeway to as a player. He's great. But he's settling a lot for these 10 to 15 turnaround shots.
Yeah, tough shots.
A little bit contested. One of the plays in the game last night, he came around a curl, beautiful screen in the paint, caught it in stride, dunked it, nobody near him.
I know.
And he's a great mover off the ball.
Yeah.
And he's just not doing it as much as he should.
You play a lot of pickup basketball, Gabe, and one of the things that you know when you play any type of basketball, whether it's organized, pickup, whatever, there are certain guys that you play with, you have an unspoken bond. You can kind of look at them and they look at you and you know, hey, I'm going to set this screen for you and then you're going to curl off it and then I'm going to roll to the hoop or I'm going to set something to set you up to create space. And I think that there is a learning curve, especially in the NBA, when there's much more sophisticated defensive fronts, there's much more intelligent IQ basketball players. It's difficult. And when you're playing with Damian Lee, how many minutes has Damian Lee played, and I'm not knocking him, I'm just saying, how many minutes combined has he played with Kevin Durant, with Klay Thompson, with Kevon Looney? Like, there is a built-up chemistry that you need to develop over time. Now, here's another guy who he's looked really good at times, and he's been very frustrating at times, and that's Kevon Looney. I still love Kevon Looney, but people going up in arms about Kevon Looney's not giving them the impact. Dude, the guy got a $2 million deal. What do we think? He was like a $15 million a year player? Like, he's the eighth guy, you know? He's the seventh, eighth, ninth guy, depending on the rotation. So I'm not too worried about where the Warriors are at as far as them needing Steph back, them needing Draymond back, and it looking kind of ugly right now. That's kind of goes par with the course. When you spend all of the money on superstar players, your bench, your depth is going to be super razor thin. And so the margin of error is significantly bigger. Oh, we got somebody on the line? We got him? All right. We'll get to him in a second. We got Grant Cohn coming up here, top of the hour. Let's get legal, though, before we do that. We're going to talk 49ers. We'll get back into the Warrior conversation. But I think let's talk some 49ers. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. We are the flagship of the Warriors. And now let's bring on my buddy from the Press Democrat, Grant Cohn. Grant, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, Butcher Boy?
I'm doing really good. Let's get into these 49ers. You know, you have really brought a level of coverage to this team that I've appreciated. And I mean that you look at it from a different angle. And there's this narrative that's going around locally and nationally that, like, just because you don't have pass rush or great offensive line, you just throw everything out of the books and you can't evaluate anything. And I think that that's absolutely ridiculous. I think it's absolutely ridiculous and unfair and almost an insult to my intelligence as a football fan. There's many things I've learned about this 49er coaching staff over the first 10, 11 games here. And one of them is they do not know how to properly utilize players' strengths and weaknesses. And case in point, there was a play in this game in the fourth quarter, final drive, where you had Cassius Marsh in coverage against Saquon Barkley. And the argument that I've heard from people all week is, well, they had to mix up the coverage. And I've never saw Justin Smith out in coverage against anyone ever, okay? I don't understand why Robert Saleh would ever put a defensive end who cannot cover Saquon in that type of a position. Am I being overly critical, or is this an earmark of someone who doesn't know how to utilize his defensive players?
That's a great question. Look, I'm going to defend Saleh on this one particular play because I think what he was going for was double coverage. Cassius Marsh taking the outside route and Malcolm Smith taking the inside route. Somehow they both played the outside and allowed Barkley to beat him to the inside, which really shouldn't happen in a double coverage situation. So I would put that – I think you had the right idea, double covering Barkley. But my issue with Saleh is in that on that drive and earlier in the fourth quarter, the third quarter, was not doubling Odell Beckham Jr., just allowing the Giants to put Odell Beckham Jr. on Witherspoon and going to go to work when their backs were against the wall. And they got that first down on second and 20 from the pass interference penalty. It's like the same thing happened against the Packers. When the Packers needed to win that game, they just put their best players on Greg Maben and went to work. And to me, Saleh can't allow one weak link to sink the entire team. If you know one guy is a target like that, like Witherspoon is, you gotta help him out, put a safety over the top, make it effectively double coverage like he was trying to do with Saquon Barkley. You can't just let one guy ruin the entire team. So that's where I would fault Robert Saleh. He's allowed that right cornerback position to lose a lot of games late, and that's on him.
I totally agree. We got Grant Cohn. He's a 49er columnist for the Press Democrat. Yeah, it's very frustrating. And like they're hell-bent on this system. We got this scheme and this system, and we're going to run this. And I get that. But part of being a great coach is adjusting based on the talent, adjusting based on the situation. Odell Beckham, wide open in a zone coverage in the red zone? It feels inexcusable to me. Am I overreacting?
No, absolutely. It is inexcusable. And that's the thing. There are scheme coaches and there are football coaches. And it looks like Saleh's a scheme coach. He runs what he learned from Pete Carroll. But what happens if your right cornerback is so bad that it's sinking the entire defense? Can you make an adjustment on the fly that isn't necessarily one of the core four or five coverages you learned from Pete Carroll to make it so you don't just lose? Like, there are things you can do. You could have the safety cheat way over to his side and basically ask Richard Sherman to earn his paycheck and cover one-on-one. Or you could ask Richard Sherman to follow around the best corner, the best wide receiver, and cover him one-on-one. There are all kind of little tiny tricks you can do to help one player. And Robert Saleh, he doesn't do that. All he knows is, oh, I know cover three, I know cover one, I know the few things I learned from Pete Carroll. And that's why the Niners are losing. It's like 30 other defensive coordinators would be able to make the adjustment, and he isn't.
I agree.
You got to wonder, you know, is he not defensive coordinator material?
See, that's the way I look. And I also question whether he's got the pelts on the wall and the experience. I think that Shanahan desperately needs someone with experience on his staff. He's got such a young staff. Who is his trusted agent? We got Grant Cohn from the Press Democrat, who does a great job covering the 49ers. I want to one last question before we get to the offense. On defense, it's all negative. There's not a lot of players that are playing great this year, but one guy I've been so impressed with, maturity, instincts, his ability to wrap up, is Fred Warner. I have not been this impressed with a rookie linebacker, because people forget Bowman didn't play his rookie year. Tekeo Spikes did. Patrick Willis didn't play for the first six games. They were flushing Derek Smith down our throats. So for a guy to step in and play day one middle linebacker, green dot helmet, have you been impressed with Fred Warner as much as I have been?
Yeah, to me, he's one of two players who are foundational pieces on the defense, Buckner and Warner. I would not put Richard Sherman in that category because who knows how long he'll play and how long he'll last, although he seems to be doing all right now. And then I wouldn't put Reuben Foster in that category either because, for a million reasons. He's injury-prone, and two, he's not a playmaker, doesn't force turnovers, hasn't forced one since high school.
Wow.
Warner seems to be a playmaker. I mean, he gets his hands on – he breaks up passes. He seems close to an interception. He stripped balls before. He had that nice strip in against the Chargers. He seems like he's really smart. He seems like he's versatile. He could play middle linebacker. He could play outside linebacker. He could do whatever. He's good on special teams. I would say definitely one of their better draft picks, along with Kittle. Those would be their two best draft picks so far. unless I'm missing someone.
No, I think you're McGlinchey. I think McGlinchey's been pretty solid. But you know what? We got Grant Cohn, Santa Rosa Press Democrat here talking 49ers. Before we get to the offense, one more thing. Reuben Foster, you brought him up. Why do you think he's struggling? And it's not just the shoulder. Even when he was healthy, it just looked like they had him out in space. He couldn't play with his back to the quarterback. I feel like schematically, they don't know where he fits on this defense, and I don't think that he understands what his role is. Why is he struggling as much as he has?
Well, I think the fact that they don't let him play middle linebacker is telling. They don't trust him to make the calls. They want him, they call him the water boy, which is almost like not a nice thing to say. It's like basically you're not that smart. I mean, you would just run around and hit people.
What?
And he can do that to an extent, but you see him a lot make have missed assignments, coverage mistakes, playing man-to-man when it's really zone, playing zone when it's really man. And those tiny, those basic fundamental mistakes are killers in the red zone especially. And you don't see Fred Warner making that. So just from a mental standpoint, this is supposed to be one of the, if not the simplest, scheme defensively in the NFL, and he can't handle it. I mean, that's bad.
Yeah.
You think, what's the deal there? Because he came from Nick Saban. I mean, Nick Saban is like a Bill Belichick offshoot, very, very complex. I think what basically happened with Reuben Foster, he played behind the best defensive line in college football, the Alabama Wall. He got to run free, got to hit people. Now he's in the NFL. He's kind of small for his position. He doesn't have that. He has the Oregon Wall in front of him, which is the same thing. And his body's just falling apart. I mean, he wants to do the right thing. He plays violently. He's kind of like Jimmy Ward in that sense. I just don't know if his body can hold up to the style of play he wants to play in the NFL.
That's a good point. Grant Cohn, Santa Rosa Press Democrat on the line here. Yeah, Grant, you brought up Jimmy Ward, free safety. Actually, he looks a lot better at free safety than he ever did at cornerback. But
right.
The final drive, I'm at the stadium. I'm sitting next to Bonte, my buddy Anthony, and I'm watching Solomon Thomas practice on the sidelines in the final drive. Did you watch that? He was doing like hand motion practicing, like he was like prepping for a fight. I'm like,
yeah.
The number three pick can't get on the field in the final drive? What's going on with that guy?
Yeah, people always say, I always hear, you know, they're not using him right. He's not a scheme fit. Like, no, the issue is not the scheme. He can play in a base defense. He could play in a 3-4 or 4-3. It doesn't matter. The issue is he's not someone you want rushing the quarterback ever. In a third down nickel situation, you don't want him on the field. There's a lot of people on the 49ers better than him, and you just have to they have to understand that he's a bust in that sense, and they clearly do. They're not putting any pressure on Robert Saleh to play him on third down as they shouldn't. The thing I don't understand is, what happened to Julian Taylor? That guy was really good in the preseason, and all of a sudden he's getting no shot. Why? I mean, Eric Armstead has had plenty of opportunities. He's nothing. Sheldon Day, he's fine for a backup. I'd like to see Julian Taylor. This coaching staff has shown that they don't accurately evaluate their players in practice. They had Nick Mullins all along, didn't realize it. This Julian Taylor guy could be something, could give him a spark, and he's not getting better. He's not getting better on the bench or in practice. Maybe 10 years ago when they had full contact practices, he could learn something. But now he's just doing like light scout teamwork during the week. This is a redshirt wasted year. Put him in the game. He might actually help.
Totally agree. Grant Cohn, Santa Rosa Press Democrat. Yeah, assessing their own talent. It's like Ronald Blair. Like, this guy, every time he plays, he makes something happen. Is he undersized? Yeah, the guy's a playmaker. Play this guy. It makes no sense to me, Grant. I'm glad that you're freely admitting this. Let's get to the offensive side, because this is where Shanahan cuts his teeth. This is why he was hired. This is why he was given a six-year deal. And one of the nuances of the run game, and everyone wants to go, look at the yards per carry. Look at their top five or top 10 in the rushing. And I go to the guys all offseason. I said, how are they going to run the ball in the fourth quarter when teams know they want to run it, when they have a stacked box and they want to ice out a game? And I was assuming that they'd have Jimmy Garoppolo in the fold, and it would be even more precedent that they'd have to run. I feel like it's a smoke and mirrors run game in the sense that when they have chances early on, they can gas you when you don't know it's coming. But in the fourth quarter, push comes to shove, there's no running room. And I'm really concerned, not just about the O-line, not about Breida, just Shanahan, how he looks at the running back position. Can they find a beast mode back in the fourth quarter? Because I feel like that's why they're losing a lot of these fourth quarter leads, Grant.
It is totally a smoke and mirrors running game, and that's why he lost the Super Bowl, because he had Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, who are a couple of scat backs, and he couldn't run with the lead against the Patriots. Of course they need a red zone back. They need a fourth quarterback. The Patriots, look at them. They have four different running backs, but they're not all the same. They don't have four scat backs. They have a big guy. They used to have LeGarrette Blount. They would have small guys. They have pass catchers. You have complementary backs. I mean, it seems like Shanahan always has the 200-pound scat back, and he just has a bunch of them because one replaces the next when one gets hurt. But absolutely, they can't run the ball in the fourth quarter. They can't run the ball in the red zone. Look at Matt Breida. If you get a chance, look at his splits. He's averaging like 7 yards a carry when he's on his own side of the field. But when things get compressed, when he's on the other side of the field, he's averaging like 3 yards a carry. Wow. I mean, Shanahan's entire thing, his entire offense is about space and speed and creating big plays. But when the field is compressed, like in the red zone, all of a sudden, none of his philosophy no longer works.
That's very interesting.
He's not going to beat you. You know, he needs, and if you look, for 10 years, he's been in the league a long time. He's always struggled in the red zone, unless he's had like Andre Johnson in his prime, or Julio Jones in his prime. Right now, he has George Kittle and can't figure out how to get him the ball in the end zone. And that's on Kyle, because Kittle seems like he's an all-pro type talent.
I agree.
Figure it out, you know?
I agree. I totally agree. Grant Cohn, Santa Rosa Press Democrat. Let's real quick on the, we're up against it here, but real quick on that offensive side, obviously George Kittle's an absolute star. I love him. McGlinchey's been really good as a draft pick. I really like him on the O-line. Weston Richburg, I know everyone wants to talk Nick Mullen, CJ. I'm more worried about Dante Pettis. I'm serious when I say this. You had this guy in the fold. You picked him over all these other receivers. You passed on Corey Davis last year. You passed on guys this year. I get it. I like Dante Pettis as a prospect. I don't know if he'll ever be a number one. He looks like he's super gun-shy in the return game. What has happened to this guy's psyche?
Look, all I saw when I saw him in OTAs, this was, what, May?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I thought was he's afraid of contact in a non-contact practice.
Ugh.
He's given alligator arms going across the middle in practice, and no one's going to touch him. And I thought, well, that doesn't bode well. And I wrote it, and people said, well, it doesn't matter. It's just practice. Well, now he's facing real-life bullets, and it seems like he has the same issue. He seems like he may be effective if you keep him in space, like way out in the edge, one-on-one against a cornerback, but he's not gonna. How many one-on-one opportunities is he really going to get with no safety over the top? And he just doesn't seem to make. He's not explosive. He's not big. He's not tough. He's not super fast. He's not even that great of a returner, which was his number one skill coming out of college. I don't really understand what he brings to an NFL team. It seems like another bust. But Richie James, on the other hand, looks explosive and interesting, and I wish he would get some more playing time.
Absolutely.
Another seventh-round pick who should get more playing time.
Absolutely. And then with Trent Taylor just completely falling off the map, I don't know what's going on. Grant, I could talk 49ers with you all day. I really appreciate you coming on. I mean this sincerely. Grant Cohn, Santa Rosa Press Democrat, is the top 49er cover, the guy who covers the team. You want to get insights and honest opinions, go follow Grant Cohn, Santa Rosa Press Democrat. I sincerely appreciate it. Me and my friends, 49er fans, we appreciate where you're coming from, because you're just a straight shooter, and I mean that sincerely, Grant. Keep up the good work.
Joe, you're a great guy. I love you forever for that.
It's the truth, bro.
I appreciate that.
Real recognize real, buddy. Have a great Sunday, all right?
Yeah, you too, man. I appreciate it. Take care.
Sounds good. Santa Rosa Press Democrats, Grant Cohn. Phenomenal, phenomenal breakdown. Everybody wants to talk CJ and Nick Mullens. We're here talking, you know, run game in a compressed area space in the 20s and Dante Pettis' lack of physicality. On the other side, we're going to get back to the Warriors, and we're going to talk a little 49ers as well, because I have a couple of thoughts about the stadium. On the other side, here, The Butcher Shop, 957, The Game.
Now back to The Butcher Shop on 957, The Game. Here's Joe Shasky.
Woo! Nicotina on a Sunday. Nothing better than that, San Francisco. Wake on up. We got an NFL Sunday. Let's go through some of the scores real quick. Steelers are beating the Jags. Looks like it just went final. And Big Ben Roethlisberger, if you have him in fantasy, Big Ben, 314 yards, 3 total touchdowns, and 3 picks. Hopefully you're in a league that doesn't negate you for interceptions. But yeah, it looks like the Steelers win a close one. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey on the trade block, I mean, I don't know what it's going to cost you. I'm assuming multiple high picks, first rounder, a couple second, who knows? But I would entertain that if I'm any team in the NFL. And I don't know why Jacksonville will be getting rid of him. Clearly, he must be some sort of a distraction. You have the Bengals losing to the Ravens. Lamar Jackson balling out. Lamar Jackson, good for him. I was wrong there. I didn't think he'd be a successful NFL quarterback. We will see moving forward. Guru's Cowboys, 22-19 over the Falcons. And then you have the Panthers losing to the Lions. Panthers, two losses in a row after I anointed them a playoff team. I am so wrong. I don't know how they lose to the Lions. Matt Patricia, I mean, is he just like the upside down man? Every week that I think he's going to win, he loses. When I think he's going to lose, he wins. Unbelievable. And then we have the Titans getting absolutely crushed by the Colts, 38-10. The Bucks lose to the Giants, so the New York Giants are now a couple of games out of the first slot in the NFL draft. Your Oakland Raiders are up early, 7-0 on a Jared Cook touchdown. Derek Carr's back! Gruden's back! Looks like the Texans and the Washington Redskins. Texans win 23-21. Again, if you are just tuning in, Alex Smith had a very severe ankle injury. I feel bad for him. I was never an Alex Smith fan, per se, in the sense that I just thought he was extremely limited. Doesn't mean he's not a solid player, a really good player. I just never considered him a quote-unquote franchise quarterback who you could put the ball into his hands 50 times a game, have him drop back and win you games in November, in December, in January. But he had the Redskins looking really good. And then Colt McCoy comes in and they hold on for a win. So on this NFL day, what else we got on the, we got the Chargers and the Broncos, the AFC West matchup going on right now. Very interesting. And so Niner fans, where are you at on the Niners right now? You still got faith in Kyle Shanahan? 888-957-9570. You can hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. I'm still optimistic about Kyle Shanahan and his 6-year deal. I think that he is clearly a brilliant play caller. I think that he's clearly making the most out of the least. But I also think that his evaluations, John Lynch's evaluations on certain players on the roster, certain players in the draft, is definitely up in question. And we were all ready to anoint Adam Peters, this scouting draft guru. Oh, look what they did. They traded back Mitchell Trubisky. They let them move up. They got Solomon Thomas, and they got Reuben Foster. Something's up with Reuben Foster. I don't know what it is. The shoulder, I don't know if it's the IQ. You have to be a very intelligent person to play middle linebacker in the NFL. And, you know, Grant Cohn brought up that the 49ers internally call him Waterboy. That's alarming. That's alarming that they make that statement. And I that almost feels, I mean, is that disrespectful?
I mean, no disrespect to the film career of Adam Sandler, but me personally in that situation, I would consider that a sign of disrespect.
I would too. And one of the aspects, I've watched Ruben very closely. The first year he was playing so instinctual. He was just going out there. He's making plays. He was getting underneath guards, underneath tackles that were trying to pull and get to that second level. And he was a sure tackler on a team with no sure tacklers. And then this year, whether he hurt the shoulder at the beginning of the year, whether it was the suspension, I don't know, the position change to the outside, he just doesn't set the edge well. He isn't instinctual. He's not taking on fullbacks, taking on guards, taking on running backs with the same violence that he did last year. And it's really alarming because he was a guy I chalked up. I said, man, he has potential to be an every single year top five inside linebacker. And I just don't see that right now. Conversely, Fred Warner has completely stepped up and been an absolute stud. Absolute stud. I mentioned it to Grant Cohn in the last interview, and I truly believe this. I've been watching the 49ers my entire life. I've seen a lot of rookies come in and step in and play on the defensive side of the ball. Famously, you know, Ronnie Lott, you had Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson, all playing in the secondary on that famous 81 championship team, and they were all rookies, and that was brilliant and phenomenal. Alden Smith recently, 6th pick overall. He was more of a rotational player. He didn't even start and play the whole game. He would come in very certain situations, and he was unreal in 2011. Navarro Bowman barely played his rookie year because they had Tekeo Spikes. And then I brought up Patrick Willis. And Patrick Willis's rookie year, they had Derek Smith. I don't know if you guys remember Derek Smith, but he was a really good player for the Redskins. He comes over here. He's just a veteran, just what you look for in a linebacker. Smart. He wasn't the greatest athlete per se, but he was a leader. And he started the first 5 or 6 games of the year, and they would play Patrick Willis on certain situations, but he didn't start day one green dot helmet the way Fred Warner is. And I think it's really, really impressive. His athleticism, Fred Warner's, his instincts, his ability to cover guys in space, his sure tackling in an era where you can get flagged for, you know, hitting the guy too much, too hard, too soft, etc. He's just been really, really, really good. And I think he's really mature beyond his years. That's a BYU thing. It has to be, right? I mean, it totally has to be. It's the Mormon thing for him. But he's been really, really good. And he's definitely eclipsed his draft selection status in the third round. I think he's playing like a first rounder. Mike McGlinchey, another guy starting on the O-line, has been brilliant at the tackle spot. Highest rated offensive lineman per PFF. Higher than even Quentin Nelson, his teammate at Notre Dame, your boys. All right, the Irish. By the way, they might slip into the national championship game. We will talk about that. We will tease that toward the end. We got John Dickinson coming in to do Warriors pregame at about 2:30. So, Warrior fans, I know you want to talk Warrior drama. I'll let them talk Warriors. We'll talk a little NFL right now. I think we should stick in with the NFL. People want the NFL because it's an NFL Sunday. And yes, it's still 7-0 Oakland Raiders over Arizona, but I want to continue this 49er conversation. And one of the things that I've looked at when it comes to the defense is just schematically, who's having a better year this year than last year? Now, clearly Fred Warner, like I said, is playing really, really well, but he wasn't on this team last year. I look at the defensive line, and DeForest Buckner started off great. That game in Minnesota was unbelievable, but it's been few and far between as far as impact plays since then. He's been getting beat up with the double teams. I don't think there's another guy on the line who's helping him out. I also think he's exhausted. And I think it's taken a physical toll on him. He needs help on that line. And everybody was so quick in the offseason to say, oh, he could be a defensive player of the year candidate. I really like DeForest Buckner. But there is a massive drop-off. And this is no slight to him. There is a massive drop-off from Aaron Donald, who is the freak of all freaks and is going to be the defensive player of the year, and DeForest Buckner. Like, there's no comparison. Aaron Donald, every spot on the line, dominates. Aaron Donald splits through double teams, splits through Hall of Fame left tackles, right tackles, guards, everything. The guy is a turnover monster. He'll rip the ball out like he's pulling an accordion. He's unbelievable. He's an absolute force that on every single play needs to be accounted for.
Rock with me, Butch.
Go.
Never seen a better pass rush out of the interior line since John Randall.
Great call. John Randall, one of my favorites. And very similarly, they have huge chests. Huge chest. I bet he was a great wrestler. My cousins are all wrestlers. They're big guys. I'm a small guy. They're big guys. Giant chests. Giant neck. Like, no neck, really.
I don't know if you saw, but this actual photo of Aaron Donald in a workout in offseason got some run.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically exactly what you described. I'll hit you with a real copy.
Shoot
in a
me.
Bit.
Yeah.
But just the head.
Chiseled.
And then a block.
Yeah.
Underneath. A square.
He's unreal. He's unreal. And you know what? I have a ton of appreciation for him because he does not take a play off. I watched them against the 49ers at Levi's, and I just watched 99 the whole time. And Sue is really good. Sue is a space eater, but he takes plays off from time to time. If the ball's not coming in his direction, you can see him kind of ease up. Aaron Donald does not stop. That dude has a motor. He's going straight to the Hall of Fame. He is awesome. And I wanted to see, again, not that same exact impact because that doesn't feel fair to DeForest Buckner. But I wanted to see that type of motor from him. I think he's a different physical player. He's a little taller and longer. He's not as short and stout and rhino-ish. You know what I mean? Like, Aaron Donald's so fast in a short space, and he uses his hands so well. DeForest does a really good job using his long arms and his hands, but I do feel like it takes him a second to get up from his three-point stance. So they're just different players. But I looked at this defensive line, and I wanted to see Solomon Thomas show me something this year. And he showed me nothing. He showed me nothing. And it's been really disappointing because I expected him to at least be a serviceable starter. And right now, I just don't see it. I don't see it. And old-time 49er fans will like cringe when I say this name. He reminds me of Reggie McGrew. Ugh. He reminds me of Kentuan Ballmer. Like, ugh. And those are bad names when it comes to defensive line busts in 49er history. And so it's just frustrating. And then defensively in the backfield, I think Richard Sherman's been brilliant. And I hear what Grant's saying, oh, you can't build around him. I get that. I want to see this 49er team, though, make him a 49er for the foreseeable future. I've watched him in between snaps. I've watched him when he's on the sidelines. I've really kept a close eye on Richard Sherman, and I think that he has been an unbelievable leader and coach on the field. I do think we've overrated his pass coverage skills. I think that he can still be beat with the 2 and 3 move routes, and a lot of DBs can. I mean, even Patrick Peterson, who's at his physical apex, is getting beat on double moves. Like, that happens. But when Richard can get his hands on you, there is no more sure tackler in the defensive backfield for the 49ers than Richard Sherman. He's been brilliant. In space, he tackled Saquon Barkley the other night. It was just unbelievable. Wrapped him up real high, very textbook. And again, they need vets. They need vets. And I was so disappointed that the 49ers let Eric Reed walk for many reasons. But first, being that they have no safeties. Like, everyone was like, oh, Adrian Colbert's going to take this leap forward. Okay, he might. But, like, every year I'm watching Jaquaski Tartt walk off the field hurt. Jimmy Ward walk off the field hurt. Adrian Colbert played, like, 7 games. Like, you need depth. You had $40 million extra in cap, and you didn't spend any of it.
Well, fold it right back into what you were saying about Sherman. He can get beat over the top. He doesn't have the burst like he used to have back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine how much better he would be if he had the freedom to press the line a little bit more?
Agreed.
And he had Eric Reed over the top.
Agreed.
Ready to help him out.
I totally agree with that. And not only that, this team lacks leadership. They lack veteran leadership. Last year, I kept saying, who's the leader on the team? You let that guy walk in free agency, Eric Reed. And I know you brought in Richard Sherman, and I like that move. But I want to see this team defensively go out and spend money. Everyone's like, oh, we got to slow build this through the draft. No, speed this thing up. You're so far away. I want to see them spend money. And this is my order, my free agent wish list, depending on if they get franchised or not. Jadeveon Clowney is the number one guy I'm circling. Number two, DeMarcus Lawrence. Could they both get franchise tagged? Possibly. But I am willing to move draft picks to get two impact players who can help you right now, day one, and help DeForest Buckner, help that secondary, which is so depleted, and get me some pass rush on the outside. Now, they're different players. Jadeveon plays more of an outside linebacker in a 3-4, which I would like the Niners to return to that scheme. And DeMarcus Lawrence is more of your traditional 4-3 end, but he's a beast. He's an absolute beast. He's a better version of Michael Bennett, who is a dang good player. Really good player. I also want to see this team throw money at Earl Thomas. Again, all three of these guys are older. You're going to have to pay up front. I have no problem with it. Spend the money. If it doesn't work out, you can cut them down the line.
You have said so many times about how much cap space they're sitting on right now and doing not a dang thing with.
It's ridiculous. It drives me bonkers. And then when I watch Greg Maben, you know, getting starts, and I watch Antoine Exum, who I like, but it's like he's a 28-year-old rookie. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Spend some money, give me, even if it's a second-tier aging free agent, bring those guys in. Like, I need those guys. Then you can ease in the rookies. And again, watch the NFL today. Look at how many injuries there were today. Alex Smith goes out. They got Colt McCoy back in him. He's not that great. But my point being is you got to be deep. You got to have a lot of veterans who can step in. If somebody goes down, you plug someone else in there. And then I'm not relying on rookies. Offensively, for the 49ers, I told you guys the first 2-3 weeks of preseason, I just don't see it with C.J. Beathard. And that's not a knock on him. It's just a reality. He's slow. He's slow to process. He's slow to anticipate where the rush is coming from. He's slow to check the ball at the line. He's slow to get rid of the ball. He's got a slow throwing motion. I just think everything he does is very slow. I also think he's been hit so many times that now he's even more cautious and even more slow. He took a sack on